Bible basis for the things I'm going to say. One might say, you have found the practice guilty and now you're going to try the case. Well, that's not the situation. I've tried the case over decades. And I don't guess there's been a time in my life that I did not consider gambling to be wrong. Although there might have been times in my early years when I didn't really even think about a certain thing being gambling. So let's begin by looking at a definition of gambling. The word is not found in the Bible. A lot of people make a big deal out of that. Does this mean it is not dealt with? Gambling has gone on from the earliest history of man. In history, we can find all kinds of evidence that gambling was done. It is good to remember, though, I think this is a significant point, as we consider the fact that there is no mention of gambling in the Bible, we also lack a single situation in which a child of God practiced gambling. And with all the gambling that has gone on in ancient times, it is interesting to me, there's not any record at all of a child of God practicing gambling in the Bible. But let me suggest a parallel for you to think about. Is the word duel or dueling found in the Bible? It is not found, at least in the King James Version or the American Standard Version. Could we therefore conclude that since dueling is not found in the Bible, that it would be an activity that would be all right for Christians to engage in? Hopefully we all realize that we certainly could not take any such position as that. Since the word itself is not mentioned, what would we have to do if we were going to study the appropriateness of dueling? We would have to look at the principles that are involved, wouldn't we? That's what we'd have to do. And that's what we have to do any time that a topic is raised that is not specifically dealt with in the Bible. We then have to look at the principles that are involved. So that's what I propose to do today with the matter of gambling. The meaning of the word, first of all, in gambling, a wager or a stake is involved whereby one stands to gain at the loss of others depending upon the outcome of some selected event of chance. In other words, it's not a matter of casting a lot to see who does something. There has to be a stake. There has to be a wager where there is something of value that one is going to gain at the loss of others depending on the outcome of some selected event of chance. Second, the element of chance is arbitrarily determined or contrived by the parties involved, meaning that in the nature of gambling, there is risk. There is an element of chance that has been chosen. It is desired by the parties to it. Let's take a few situations and analyze them. Casting lots is not necessarily gambling. It may be just a way of allowing chance to determine who pays for a thing. If we were going to get a drink, a Coke or something like that together, and I wanted to pay for it, and you said, no, I want to pay for it. No, we both want to pay for it. We're not trying to get what belongs to each other there. So we say, okay, since I want to pay for it, you want to pay for it, let's flip a coin, we'll see who pays for it. Now, that is not gambling. That is exactly the same thing as was done in Bible days by casting a lot to see who did it. Gambling involves an effort for me to win what is yours when you would rather win what is yours. And for me to win means that you lose. A game of skill is not gambling necessarily, even if something is won, unless some kind of stake is wagered on the outcome. There has to be a bet or a stake or something like that involved. Investing in the stock market is not gambling, even though risk is involved. The risk is not contrived. In other words, nobody goes into it and says, why don't we make this thing where somebody is going to have to win and somebody is going to have to lose. And let's incorporate risk into it. No, nobody does that deliberately in the stock market. And most investors wish there was no risk. But in the nature of things, with the way the market goes, there are some risks. But the risks are not contrived, nor are they desirable. Also, in an investment, the money earns. When you buy stocks, you are actually buying a part of the company. The money that you put in on those stocks becomes capital that the company can use to build, to enlarge, to provide jobs for other people, to produce products that are then sold to society. It totally is a different thing than gambling. Nobody has to lose for a stock to pay off. And the money is then used to provide buildings and jobs and all sorts of things like that. Another example that is often put forward by the shallow-minded is that of the farmer. Now, in this area, even though farming is not what it used to be, it is still enough that we know that it's a very chancy thing. And in farming, there is a great deal of risk, but it is not contrived, nor is it desired. The farmer wishes there were no risk. If there'd be any way to take the risk out of farming, the farmer would surely be the one who would want to do it. And when the farmer wins, when he has a crop, then he benefits others. He does not take anything away from someone else when his crop turns out good. Nobody loses anything, and only good is done. Therefore, these efforts to equate gambling and the risk involved in gambling with investing in the stock market and farming and so on, they fall flat. There is absolutely no parallel between them. I think there is a helpful parallel between gambling and dueling. And so I want to use that parallel just a moment so that we can think about this from a Bible standpoint. All right, gambling is an accepted form of taking what belongs to another when he does not want you to have it. In other words, stealing. He, in turn, is seeking to take from you what belongs to you, which you are reluctant for him to have. Neither one of you wants the other to have it. You want it yourself. So this is an accepted form of stealing from one another. Dueling in some societies has been an accepted form of murder because it is a situation that maybe for some kind of a slight that one fancies another has made against him, they meet on a field or somewhere like that, and by agreement they are going to try to kill each other. And that's all right, except that one party is wanting to be the one who succeeds in killing the other and not being killed himself. His objective is to kill the other man. The other man's objective is to kill him and not be killed. It is, therefore, an accepted form of murder. So how would we deal with these things? In self-defense, if one were in a self-defense situation, the very same situation might exist, except that it is not contrived. And one of the parties is not at all agreeable to it. Therefore, the idea of one being attacked and defending himself would not at all fit the parallel of dueling. So dueling is a situation in which the two parties have agreed they're going to try to murder each other. In investing and farming, one may take risks, but they are not contrived and they are not desired. So I see a parallel that exists between dueling and gambling. And on the other hand, self-defense and investing and farming and things like that. There is a clear distinction between the activities. Now then, what is wrong with gambling? Understand that I'm not saying that I'm going to read you some passages that say, "And whosoever gambleth shall not inherit the kingdom of heaven." You know, I can't find that in 1 Corinthians 6 or Galatians 5 or something like that. But when I look at what is done when gambling occurs, then I find some things that we can look at and go by. There are various ways set forth in Scripture how one can get income. One of those is labor. Over and over and over, the Bible emphasizes labor as an honorable way for a person to make a living. God set forth this basic idea after the sin of man in the Garden of Eden. He said, by the sweat of his face, man shall earn his bread. So the idea was, man shall earn his bread, not gamble for his bread. In the Proverbs, the wisdom of the ant is held up before the sluggard as an example of working to provide for one's needs. Work, labor, is a way of making an income that is held up with great honor in the Bible. The worthy woman labored to provide for her needs and the needs of her household in Proverbs chapter 31, in all of these verses that we have cited here. She rose up early and worked. She did not eat the bread of idleness. She worked diligently. Jesus taught that it is the laborer who is worthy of his food. He said, the laborer is worthy of his hire. The laborer is worthy of his hire. Paul discusses the ways of deriving a livelihood, and gambling is conspicuously absent from among them in 1 Corinthians 9, verses 7 through 10. He talks about those who profit from their activities. I'm going to turn to this passage and look at it just briefly. 1 Corinthians 9, beginning in verse 7. What soldier ever serveth at his own charges? Who planteth a vineyard and eateth not the fruit thereof? Or who feedeth a flock and eateth not of the milk of the flock? Do I speak these things after the manner of men? In other words, he's saying, am I limited only to examples from the common affairs of men? Or saith not the law also the same? For it is written in the law of Moses, thou shalt not muzzle the ox when he treadeth out the corn. Don't muzzle the ox when he what? When he's treading out the corn. The principle is that the activity, the labor of the ox entitles the ox to partake of the benefits of his labor. Is it for the oxen that God careth, or saith he it assuredly for our sake? Yea, for our sake it was written, because he that ploweth ought to plow in hope, and he that thresheth to thresh in hope of partaking. So he mentions here the idea of labor. One who is active, who works, and so on, he should be able to expect a return from what he does like that. In Ephesians 4:28, Paul said, let him that stole steal no more. Now, I think of some ways this might be worded today. Let him that stole steal no more, but let him go to Philadelphia, Mississippi, or a host of other places now where there are casinos and riverboats, and let him go to Las Vegas, let him go to Reno, let him go to whatever, and let him gamble. Let him steal no more, but rather let him gamble. There's no thought, no verse, nothing like that in the entire Bible. Instead, Paul says, let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing that is good, that he may have whereof to give to him that hath need. So the one that stole is to steal no more. What is gambling? Gambling is an accepted form of stealing. Let him that stole steal no more. Let him labor, not gamble. Paul taught the Thessalonians, these pagans who were converted by the apostle on the second missionary journey. He taught the Thessalonians that they were to work to provide their needs. 1 Thessalonians 4, 11 and 12. And that ye study to be quiet, and to do your own business, and to work with your hands, even as we charged you, that you may walk becomingly toward them that are without, and may have need of nothing. In the second letter, look at the example of labor that he mentions. Chapter 3 and verse 8. Neither did we eat bread for nothing. Neither did we eat bread for nothing at any man's hand, but in labor and travail, working night and day, that we might not burden any of you. We gave you an example, Paul says. Verse 10, for even when we were with you, this we commanded you, if any will not work, neither let him eat. For we hear of some that walk among you disorderly, that work not at all, but are busybodies. James speaks of business and labor as a way of gaining income. He says, come now, ye that say, today or tomorrow we shall go into a certain city and spend a year there and trade and get gain. And then he goes on and says, whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow. But the point we're making from this passage is James is not criticizing the activity. What he is criticizing in the passage is the tendency to leave God out of our plans. But nevertheless, in what he says, it is apparent that these are ways the Bible recognizes of making a living. So labor, working for what you get, that's one of the honorable ways of receiving money that the Bible talks about. A second is exchange, the idea of barter or purchasing. The worthy woman bought the field. She did not gamble for it. Proverbs 31 verse 16. The man who obtained the great treasure didn't say, let's have a poker game and see who wins it. The man who obtained the pearl of great price, in both of these cases and stories that Jesus tells, Matthew 13, they purchased the field where the treasure was. Or the pearl merchant purchased the pearl, sold everything they had in order to buy it. And that is an accepted way of receiving something. You want something, then give something in exchange. You purchase it, you buy it, you give something equal in exchange for it. It is at least equal to you. You want this enough that you'll give all of these other things you have in order to get it. But in our society, the idea would be, I'll gamble you for it. But you see, this never entered the mind of the Lord. It never entered the mind of the Lord to gamble for this. And really, the point he was making here in these parables, anyhow, is that when something is of truly great value, then we should be willing to do whatever we have to do in terms of what we have to give up, or what we have to raise, whatever we have to do, it is worth everything that we do. Jesus sent the disciples into a nearby city to buy bread in John 4:8, on the occasion when he talked with the woman at the well. The disciples in the early chapters in Acts sold their possessions to raise money. They did not buy lottery tickets hoping that one of them would strike it rich and therefore would have money to give to everybody. I have not found that winners of lotteries are those who turn around and are happy they give their money to everybody. That doesn't seem to go with the temperament. Abraham could have easily suggested that they gamble for the land of Ephron the Hittite, Genesis 23. Instead, Ephron the Hittite told him 400 pieces of silver, and Abraham proceeded to count out 400 pieces of silver, and he bought the land. It never occurred to Abraham to say, well, I'll gamble you for it. This is a fascinating thought to me. The law of Moses taught against having deceitful weights because to use them was stealing, and to use them would deprive a person of what was his. The idea was to deal fairly with others and not deprive them of what was rightfully theirs. And in gambling, the whole point is you are out to win what is somebody else's, which they don't want you to have. They instead want to have what you've got. A third way was by love, when something would be just given to somebody. The early disciples gave to those who had nothing because they loved them. Jesus himself said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. So this was a thing that was done by love, and those who received it by virtue of the love of those who gave it. They did not receive it because they won it, and thereby deprived people who did not want to give it. It's just a totally different situation. And remember that one of the purposes of labor is to have to be able to give to him that is in need. The gambler says it is more blessed to receive than to give. But that is not what Jesus said. Jesus put it the exact opposite way. It is more blessed to give than to receive. The gambler is not interested in giving. He is not interested in losing. He is interested in receiving and in winning. And that is the whole point of what he is doing. Gambling involves selfishness because the gambler seeks the others for his own. But listen to this old statement here, found in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 5. Love does not behave itself unseemly, does not seek its own, is not provoked. In other words, is not selfish. It does not seek its own. It is not selfish. But the gambler is selfish. He is totally focused on what he wants to win out of this, even if he deprives, doesn't matter to him whom he deprives of anything. He is willing to see the other person lose his house, his car, his bank account, everything he's got, because it's going to make him richer. A fourth way is through inheritance. In Luke 15, the story of the prodigal son, the father gave to the son the portion that would come to him. That was a legitimate thing. In Numbers 27, verses 1 through 11, instructions are given regarding inheritance. Also in Deuteronomy 21, 2 Corinthians 12, 14, the point is made that the parents lay up for the children, not the children for the parents. So the idea of inheritance is also a way of transferring property and goods in the Bible that is recognized as an honorable thing. Jesus himself used the example of usury or interest. Because in the parable of the talents, when he came back to check up on his servants, the five-talent man, the two-talent man, and the one-talent man, remember that when the one-talent man came forward with his talent that he had buried, he came back to give it to the Lord. The Lord said, well, you should at least have put it out to those, put it out in the market, as it were, that it might gain interest. So these five ways that we have broken down here are all ways that the Bible shows that money and possessions could be transferred in an honorable way. It's an honorable thing. On the other hand, when one gains from gambling, someone else has lost, and what you take is what the other party is loath to part with. You have given nothing of equal value for what you receive, which violates all the passages that teach that we should treat one another fairly. It is not treating one another fairly to deprive one another of the various possessions that we have. As we pointed out, it also violates the principles of loving one's neighbor and of doing good to him. All right, now, let me say at this point, we've looked at the fact that the Bible teaches there are certain ways that one can gain an income or can have things, that property can be transferred. They do not include gambling. Gambling is never suggested as a way of doing that. And what we pointed out here is that gambling itself violates the basic principles of doing good to one another and of being kind to one another, of giving equal value for that which one receives, of being fair, and all of that. In addition, even if gambling were technically all right to do within itself, it has been shown to encourage covetousness and to encourage addiction. I've seen it on television. I've had people tell me they've seen it, but I haven't seen it myself. How you go out into the West in areas around Las Vegas and Reno and all those places, and you can go in, I mean, at airports. They've got the coins, the slot machines all over the place. And there are people sitting at those just chunk, chunk. That's life. It's like a little monkey that's been trained to just do a certain thing over and over and over and over and over again. It just consumes their lives. Gamblers tend to gamble with the very money they need to support their family. Gambling encourages a very uncertain, one-sided effort to obtain money instead of the many dependable ways there are to get it. In slum neighborhoods and ghettos, signs are put up advertising the lottery as your ticket out of the ghetto. Now tell me, why would signs be posted in a ghetto saying that the lottery is your way out of the ghetto? What are they trying to do? They're trying to get the people in the ghettos to buy the tickets. Now, what are the people in the ghettos? These are people who have the least money. And so what are they doing? They're spending their money on the lottery. The Wall Street Journal reported that gambling in a lottery is technically a swindle. I think that's pretty strong information. And coming from a paper, a respected paper like the Wall Street Journal, gambling in a lottery is technically a swindle. You are being swindled. One of my favorite cartoons is a Dilbert cartoon. That's one of my favorite characters. Anyhow, one of my very favorite cartoons of Dilbert really illustrates this point. Dogbert was going around selling lottery tickets. However, it was the day after the lottery. You understand now? In other words, everybody knew who won. But there's still all these, you know, maybe 5 million lottery tickets. Okay, Dogbert gets these tickets and he starts selling them, except he sells them half price. You can buy one of these for 50 cents instead of a dollar. And the point is, and you've only lessened your chances by winning by one. Day before it was 1 in 5 million, now it's none in 5 million, but that only reduces your chances by one. Pretty good deal, huh? Well, the whole thing is absurd. People who buy lottery tickets ought to go out and burn their money in the backyard if they want to have fun. It's a swindle. It is a way of taxing people who don't want to be taxed, but they'll be taxed when it involves the practice of a vice. They will spend their money on wickedness and sin when they wouldn't pay taxes. They would recoil at the very idea of paying taxes, but a lottery is a way of everybody who participates in it paying taxes, because the overwhelming majority of them are not going to get that money. Gambling tends to attract all the unsavory elements of society, because wherever covetousness and greed are concentrated, you're going to find all forms of immorality, such as drinking, floor shows, prostitution, and you name it. Even here in Athens, I've just been so disturbed. I'll be walking around. Here I'll go through Walmarts or something like that, and I'll overhear. Used to be, when I was growing up, when I saw an older woman, I thought, now there's a grandmother. Now there is a wonderful woman. There is an honorable, good woman that wouldn't do anything wrong. And I have been shocked these days. I remember one particular time I was going along through Walmart, and as I walked by, I heard two of the cashiers who were at the moment not busy. And they were talking about all of their plans, and what they did for fun was, most of the weekends they could do it, they would take the bus to one of the casinos, they'd spend the weekend there gambling, and then they'd come back. And they were just speaking about it as if they were talking about, we're going to go out to the park and have a hot dog roast. No sense of shame. Our society has changed. It has changed a great deal. And I'm afraid it's changing even more. One of the most moss-covered, moth-eaten arguments used by advocates of immorality and vice is how much it will benefit our schools. First, the advocates of legalized alcohol argued this. Wherever legalized alcohol goes, the crime rate goes up, the accident rate goes up, and the moral level of the community goes down. You let a county or a city go wet, and you go driving through that city 6 months after that has happened, and the whole neighborhood, the whole flavor of the community, the appearance, everything that you see will be different. And it won't be better. it will be degraded and it will be worse. Now those who want legalized gambling make the same argument. I know that I am in a way preaching to the choir, as the old saying goes. I know that most of you already feel this way. But I think that we need to understand these things firmly and know what the scriptures say about them. And our young people, our children need to know that there are reasons behind a refusal to gamble and a refusal to drink and a refusal to approve of those things going on. But those who won't legalize gambling make the same argument. We could as well argue to legalize prostitution. Look how much that would help our schools. So is the idea that if it will help our schools, that will justify any wickedness, any vice, the legalization of anything, legalized drugs, legalized prostitution? One drug is already legalized. That's alcohol. Not in our county, but that's a drug. Bill Honig, past superintendent of public schools in California, said his schools would have been better off without the lottery. U.S. News and World Report. You know, what happens is, generally, these people that swallow this argument tend to say, oh, good, we've got the schools taken care of. Now we don't have to worry about them anymore, and they don't worry about them anymore. And everybody then just forgets the schools, and they assume that, oh, the money from the lottery is paying for the schools. In answer to the question, but have lottery revenues lived up to expectations? The Educational Research Service said, when it comes to education, the answer is no. Dr. Robert Goodman, professor of regional planning at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, conducted a 2-year study and found that casinos cost more to the state and communities than they promised to bring in. He said that the business that casinos generate usually comes at the expense of other entertainment businesses in that region. I have read that, I don't know how reliable this point is, but I've read that everywhere one comes in, a couple of businesses will fail, will go out. I don't know whether that's true or not. But look at this one. In the Birmingham News, John A. Williamson said, socioeconomic studies tell us that the biggest nights at the dog tracks in Alabama are the Saturday nights after the welfare checks come out on Friday. So, whom is the lottery helping? And this is an amazing statistic to me. It may be a little dated now. The town of Philadelphia, Mississippi is the location of a gambling casino. With a population of 6,800, the town has 25 pawn shops. How many pawn shops are in Athens? Not 25. Here in a little town of 6,800, 25 pawn shops. Do you know what they have 25 pawn shops for? So that people can take every possession they've got and take it down to the pawn shop and get a little handful of money so they can go back and gamble some more until they lose that too. That's what pawn shops in these gambling towns are for. Suppose there were a proposition to legalize dueling. How would a Christian vote on the matter? I believe that dueling is wrong, as I believe prostitution is wrong, and gambling is wrong, and drinking is wrong, and I believe that I need to stand against all of them. Conclusion is, gambling is not authorized in the scripture, and it is grossly irresponsible stewardship. The Lord has not given me the money that He has given me in order that I may go out and deliberately risk it in a situation that is planned to risk it, knowing that almost certainly I am going to lose that money. Jimmy the Greek, I don't have this quotation on the chart, but Jimmy the Greek, some of you have heard of him, he was saying, it's going to be a terrible thing if legalized gambling comes in, wherever it does, because people are going to get addicted to it. And he says, they think they can beat the system. And he said, there's no way. Here's a man who ought to know about gambling. And he says, you aren't going to be able to count on beating the system. You're not going to be able to count on beating the house. That conversation I mentioned earlier, it was made known to me that in a lot of cases, the gambling casinos will send the bus and provide you with free transportation for the weekend. They will even provide a room and food. Now, would you tell me why a casino feels that it can provide the transportation and the room you stay in and your food? Are they acting like the Salvation Army and they're doing this out of the good of their hearts? No. They are figuring on stripping you of every dime you've got. They're going to make a profit. And in most cases, they're going to make a big profit. So, to me, gambling is something that is as distasteful as drinking, prostitution, drugs, all of those things. They are something that no child of God ought to be involved in, and furthermore, there is no child of God, no person who is involved in one of these things, gambling, prostitution, drinking, drugs, who will not be harmed by it. He will be harmed by it. In many cases, he will be destroyed by it. Sometimes when I preach on drinking, I come across like one who feels strongly about it. Well, if you had been where I have been, and if you had seen what I have seen, you would feel strongly about it too. And when it comes to gambling, I feel very strong about it because I know a couple. And the man has been an irresponsible gambler all of his life. And he has impoverished his family and has made life torment on earth for his good wife, who never knows when she's going to turn around and discover some brand new debt that the family has got because he went out and had to raise some money somehow or other because he gambled it away. Gambling has absolutely ruined that couple and ruined that couple's life because he's an addict. And I hate it. I just hate it. And I'm not going to have any part of it. And we need to understand also that no matter how society goes, suppose there is a vote. I know there'll be a vote unless the Lord comes back before then. But suppose it is passed. I guarantee you it is not going to affect the way I feel about gambling. Nor is it going to affect what I do. I will have no part. None. And so regardless of what society does, we must be determined that we're going to maintain the life and the lifestyle that the Lord wants us to have and have no part in whatever vice becomes popular in our society. Stand against it and speak against it and vote against it when we have the opportunity. Really and truly, my emphasis is not on the vote. Even though that is an important thing to think about, my emphasis is on the issue itself. And my point is that whatever we can do to oppose it, to stop it, let's do that. Tonight I'm planning to continue the lessons that I am dealing with about returning to the foundations. And checking the foundations and seeing if we have it right. And so tonight we're going to be looking at some fundamentals again from the life of Jesus and then moving on beyond that. So that'll be for tonight. If you are not a child of God today, we plead with you to become one. Turn your life over to God. Become His child. Live the good, clean, pure life, the life of goodness, the life of promise that God has provided for us. What a joy, what a privilege to be able to be a Christian and to live the life now that a Christian can live and have the hope of heaven on top of that. If you're not a Christian, why not become one today? If you're willing to do this, we hope you will come as we stand and sing.